ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What happens when medicine is sold like a makeover?
Their marketing is very good.
Clinics with five-star reviews selling miracle cures.
I left that place thinking I found myself a solution.
But it's your body that pays the price.
I had one cheek higher than the other, one cheek further out from my nose.
Before and After, a new series on how medical hype spreads online, who profits and who pays. Search for Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. G'day, Matt Bevan here. This is If You're Listening. We are officially back from holidays, properly, and, well, look, it seems like the world is just a real-life game of Risk now. And I don't know if you've played Risk, the board game, but Australia is a really good place to be if you aren't looking for any action. It's really excellent. So very happy to be here in Eastern Australia. Needless to say, a lot has happened while we've been off, and we are looking forward to diving into all of it in a few weeks' time. But we're in the midst of this series that we're doing called Black Swans. And we're taking a deeper dive today into one of our letter writers, Alec Ramsey, the man who created Elizabeth. And a thing that we couldn't fit in is this extraordinary anecdote about one of the things that he had to do to acquire the land required to build the city of Elizabeth. It's a fascinating anecdote and a great story, and it's one that Kara Jensen McKinnon has not heard yet. Kara's here now. Hi, Kara.
I'm here, and I'm very excited to hear this story, given how much research we did into these people.
I know. It's a wild one. Oh, look, you know, speaking of research, by the way, we did a lot of research. One of the things that we didn't do is check how to pronounce their names, though.
Correct.
And we said in the episode that this guy's name was Alex Ramsey. His family got in touch to tell us that it, in fact, is Alec Ramsey. It's spelled Alex, but they're from Scottish ancestry, and so he was always in life called Alec Ramsey. But this story about this man, Alec Ramsey, is a wild one. It's funny and it's sad, but at its core, it's a story about what public service is really about. And that's because, as the South Australian Premier Thomas Playford said,
he was one of the greatest public servants South Australia has ever had, and I'm here in Elizabeth today to say that if Elizabeth is a success, it is due to the efforts of Alec Ramsey and the work that he put into it.
Yes, when you listen to it, he really does quite clearly say Alec Ramsey he very much in does. The grab.
Yes, he does. So this is Thomas Playford giving a speech in 1979, a year after Ramsey's rather dramatic and tragic death. And it includes this fantastic anecdote about Ramsey's tenacity in his work. And I'll get to all of that in a second. But this story, ever since I first started digging into Ramsey's life, I've been fascinated by him. And I'm grateful that his family got in touch to tell us how to pronounce his name correctly, because I was able to give them a call back. And I spoke to Alec Ramsey's son, Andrew. And as soon as I got on the phone, I knew that it was going to be a fun chat.
For all of his life, a restless, energetic, passionate man who, and that's what I loved about your last podcast, Matt. You really captured the passion and commitment with which he, under Playford's sort of leadership, really, really was determined to set up a really first-class environment and dwellings for people to come to South Australia and work in the industries they were hoping to attract. And as you said, it worked until it didn't.
So Alec grew up working class. He trained as a teacher and then studied economics and history at the University of Adelaide. And during World War II, he was really lobbying for a lot of funding to be given to really build up South Australia in the post-World War II reconstruction period. And through this, the government kind of identified him as a potential top public servant, and they kind of fast-tracked him to the very top of the South Australian Public Service. And by 1949, he was the manager of the Housing Trust under Playford, under Premier Thomas Playford. And from that, he got involved in a lot of other things. Now, Cara, I know you sometimes see people's LinkedIn pages and they're very heavily populated.
Yes.
They kind of feel a little bit padded. Yeah. Ramsay's was very heavily populated, but I wouldn't say that it was necessarily padded. Have a listen to his son telling us about the sorts of things he got up to.
At one stage, he was chairman of the local libraries board, the Tramways Trust, one of the schools, the Synod, the Anglican Synod. He was on the board of the ABC, the Boy Scouts, he chaired that.
Wow. It's funny how much time people had before the internet existed. It's like their days were three times longer than our days.
Yep.
That's what they could have seven jobs and still have plenty of time for their, 8 to 10 children or however many kids these people had back then.
Yes, I know. Well, I mean, this was before television mostly. So not even, there wasn't exactly. even TV to watch,
Yeah.
So, yeah, he would. Andrew told me that he'd come home from work, he'd be home, he'd have dinner with them, and then he'd have to go out to some sort of, community service meeting.
Right.
And Andrew told me that while Alec was very busy, he was a great dad too.
And he was. He built me a little sailing boat when I was young, and we learnt to sail together, and then a 28-foot plywood loop, which eventually got finished, and we had many happy weekends sailing that. It was a deep keeled boat that he kept at the yacht squadron.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a nice dad. And also several jobs and time to build a yacht.
Yes, and learn to sail with your son. And he had four kids, and I think I get the impression that all of his descendants thought very, very highly of him. And
that's so nice.
While he did get involved in sort of the high society of Adelaide, which was quite, quite snooty at times in the middle of the 20th century, he was quite bashful about it. And despite the fact that he joined the extremely exclusive Adelaide Club, he wanted to make it clear to his family that he wasn't abandoning his working class roots.
He wasn't, and he did join the Adelaide Club. I remember him being quite apologetic to us about that. He said, "Look, I really think I need to be part of this too."
For networking purposes.
Sort of apologising to his family about joining the Adelaide Club. And occasionally he'd take us there for a meal, and that was all very pleasant.
He really was a LinkedIn before its time kind of guy.
Yeah,
networking, right. Multiple jobs.
Yeah. So, if in case you weren't in love with this guy enough, let me tell you this anecdote about his work. So, as we said in the episode, he was in charge of planning the city of Elizabeth and buying up all the land. And after he bought up all the land to build the city, so imagine, all the farm, it was all farmland, and so he had to buy up, acquire all the farmland that they needed to build the houses on, right? But then the Premier, Thomas Playford, obviously part of the plan was to attract a big manufacturing firm to Elizabeth to create jobs for people there. And so Playford put Ramsay in charge of getting Holden Motorcars to move its factory to Elizabeth and told him to give the Holden bigwigs a tour. And Playford was clear that their friendship, Playford and Ramsay's, was riding on this deal going through.
Okay.
Now, we're friends, Alec, and I want to make it quite clear, if you fail in this mission, we are no longer friends. Now, I want to also make it clear that you don't get worried about technicalities. If Mr. Donner chooses a block of land and it's got the highways running through it and he wants the highway shifted, don't argue the point, shift it.
Town planning was different then, obviously.
Yes, it was.
Shift that road, it's fine.
Environmental impact studies, don't worry about it, just move the road.
Just figure it out.
There wasn't anything like that. That's why they got things done back then. Yeah, absolutely. So so Ramsay went out and did this tour with the Holden people, and the Holden people picked their spot of land that they wanted. And Ramsay came back to report to Playford on how the whole thing had gone.
Then Mr. Ramsay came back. He said, well, I've made the sale, Premier, but I'm a little bit worried about it. I said, what's the matter, Alec? He said, well, I've sold them 300 acres of land, but it's we don't own it.
So, what do you mean?
So what had happened was, so the thing was, they went out there and they bought all the land for the houses in Elizabeth, and there was this one dairy farmer who didn't want to sell.
Okay.
They were like, that's fine. Well, we don't need that land for the houses. We'll just build the houses on all the other land that we've bought. But then Ramsay's gone out there with the Holden people, and they've pointed at this guy's farm, the man who didn't want to sell, and said, we want that land. That's where we want the factory to be.
Right.
And and Ramsay's like, well, the Premier told me to just do anything to get them over the line, so I sold them the land. But now we have to go through the process of
moving these
of
cows.
Negotiating with moving these cows and the man who owns the cows and the land around it. So let's listen to Playford's characterization of the gentleman who owned the land.
And he, quite frankly, is content to live where he is. He doesn't want the responsibility of uprooting himself, taking charge of money and going somewhere else, so that although we offered him a very good price, the fact is the more we offer him, the less inclined he is to go, because he doesn't want the responsibility of the money.
What?
So
it's very 1950s time, like, that's too much money, I won't be leaving for that much money.
Yes, you're offering me too much. Yeah. So the situation was basically, I mean, I don't quite know. This man clearly was worried that if he got a big cash payout for his farm, then he wouldn't. Like it would be too much money to be sitting on. Like, it would fill his mattress with cash.
People want
to
slice and, him.
Yeah, and he was worried about what would happen to him if he had all this money.
Okay.
So Ramsay was put in charge of sorting out this problem, because that seems to just be what Ramsay did. He sorted out problems.
He had a lot of time on his hands, after all.
Yes, wasn't too busy. So he goes out to this farm before dawn one day, because that's when dairy farmers are around, and he's wandering around the farm, chatting to the dairy farmer all morning. And then eventually they invite him inside the house at midday to have a cup of tea. And so he goes into the house and he's in there chatting to the family, to the farmer and his wife, and there's a knock at the door, and it's an officer from the local council who says that the family, the farmer, hadn't registered his dog with the local council and needed to pay a fine or a fee to register his dog.
Right.
And Ramsay could tell that the family was getting quite agitated about this, and they're looking around for a receipt, trying to find, because they say that they've paid the registration fee for their dog. They're trying to find the receipt for it. They're trying to sort the whole thing out. Ramsay decides that he's going to go and sort the issue out himself, and so he heads out to have a chat to the gentleman from the local Salisbury council about, to see if he can't just sort this whole thing out.
This is so quaint. This whole conundrum is so quaint.
So he went out to the Salisbury officer, and he said to the Salisbury officer, look, I'm out here at the instruction of the Premier doing very important negotiations with this gentleman. Now you hop off, fade away, and come back about the dog another day. But the dog man had different views. Finally, Alec put his own hand in his pocket and paid the dog registration fee.
Do we have any notion how much it costs to register a dog?
I don't know.
Like, surely it was like 20 pence,
yes,
right?
Yes, I imagine
it can't have been that much money.
Well, the fact that Ramsay just had that cash in his pocket,
yeah,
that he
like,
could just...
Oh, don't worry about it, dude. I've got you.
Yeah, yeah. All right. If would 60 cents make you go away, yeah, Mr. Dogman?
Exactly.
And so, so he pays this money, but mm-hmm. this actually doesn't solve the problem because the farmer insists that Ramsay can't spend money. Like, he's worried that this is going to, you know, now put Ramsay, you know, he's now in debt to Ramsay, the 60 cents.
Okay. Or right, whatever of course. It is.
Whatever it is. The shilling that Ramsay has spent yeah. on this transaction to pay to Salisbury Council. And Ramsay's going, oh, no, oh, what do we do? And Ramsay basically had decided that it's clear that I'm not going to be able to make the deal today. So I'll find out when this guy's going to be in town next, and mm-hmm. and maybe we can meet on my turf in Adelaide rather than out here on this guy's farm. If I can lure this guy into Adelaide, then maybe you know I can convince him that, to take this enormous wad of cash for his farm. And the farmer says, "Oh no, I never go into town, but sometimes I go in to the West End Brewery." And mm-hmm. the malt house there sells me some, like, malt refuse, which I then feed to my cows.
Oh, okay.
And Ramsay goes, how often do you do this? He says, oh, once every 2 weeks. It's a really difficult job. I've got to load all the barrels of malt onto the truck. And Ramsay goes, I'll come and I'll help you load all the barrels of malt onto your truck.
And what a guy.
Yeah. So they meet up at the outside the brewery and load up all of the barrels of malt onto the truck for the farmer to take back. And then the farmer has a brilliant idea that he offers Ramsay.
And I'll tell you something else, Ramsay. I know a place around the back here where we can get a free pot of beer. And the farmer shouted, Alec, a free pot of beer. So Alec returned the hospitality and shouted the farmer. And they extended hospitality and shouted each other free pots of beer, as gentlemen would do, until we got to the stage when the farmer said to Alec, now look, Ramsay, I'd like to sell you that land if I didn't have to administer the money.
What? If he didn't have to administer the money?
Yes, he wants someone else to deal with the money, basically okay. deal, be his accountant, right?
Right, okay.
And so Ramsay presumably staggers back to the...
Yes, there was several pots of beer there.
Yes, yes.
Not a lot of food mentioned either.
No. They've been doing hard work on a hot day as well. So anyway, so he goes back, finds a phone and calls the Premier. Mm-hmm. And slurs presumably to the Premier. This is the deal. He doesn't want to deal with the money, and the Premier says, "I hereby announce. I hereby appoint you, Alec Ramsay, to be this farmer's attorney."
He needs another job after all.
Yeah, and so Ramsay agrees to manage this man's finances for the rest of his life.
Okay, all right,
and that got the deal done. And nice. Yeah, so Playford in this speech puts down the fact that Elizabeth managed to get this enormous Holden factory down to this meeting, and specifically,
I don't know whether it was two pots of beer or four or six or eight or ten. All I do know, it was an even number.
Ten pots of beer. Oh, God.
My favourite thing about it all is that they were shouting each other free beer, so they weren't in fact paying for it. They weren't shouting each other anything. They were just going and getting free beer and then drinking it and negotiating this deal. So that's how the deal got done.
Amazing.
Isn't it? It's a tremendous story. I love it. And Ramsay then looked after this farmer's estate for the rest of his life.
Wow.
And it was part of the deal. And also the farmer got to live there as well. So Ramsay was dealing with this man's money as they built the Holden factory on some part of his land.
And then the Holden factory was just another part of it, but he lived, just with the factory?
Yeah, I think he just lived just sort of part of his dairy farm was still not in the factory area. So, right. Yeah. So Thomas Playford went out of power in 1965. Mm-hmm. And by 1978, well, things were starting to weigh on Ramsay a lot. He was losing a bit of the new premier, the new government weren't as on board with the fact that Ramsay basically was doing every job in South Australia and was an incredibly influential and powerful public servant who mm-hmm. was in charge of all sorts of things. They were starting to sort of whittle back some of his control, get in his way a bit, and he found that quite difficult.
Right.
And anyway, that leads to this story that Andrew told me about the final week of Ramsay's life. And he said he tells this story about what his dad said to his mum, his Ramsay's wife, in the last week of his life.
Oh, I've got so much on my plate, Amy. Even I don't know how I'm going to get through this week. So his last night was a dinner party with some old friends, and Dad had really bad asthma. He was a shocking asthmatic, Matt, and again he saw this as a sign of vulnerability, and he wouldn't let anyone know, and he was sneaking off to try and use his puffer to resuscitate himself when he collapsed in the hallway and died.
And he died at the Adelaide Club. Oh. That was where the dinner party was. And so he died in his mid-60s, which was terribly sad, but it was, he was a lifelong sufferer of asthma. Oh. And Andrew told me what he thought motivated his dad in his extraordinary career.
Hmm. Yeah, extraordinary man, a humble man, a passionate man. And, you know, his fellow human being was what it was all about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the story of Alec Ramsay.
Lovely story.
An incredible story, and I'm really appreciative of the family for getting in touch and answering questions for us. But just what an incredible anecdote for the Premier to have about you. And for the, you know, the success of, well, the initial success of Elizabeth to be down to this extraordinary negotiation process that Alec Ramsay went through with this farmer.
Yeah.
I think it's just an incredible story.
Absolutely. Truly a visionary with those kind of housing policies. You just don't get people in politics really like that anymore, that have this kind of massive vision for something that would change a lot of people's lives.
Well, I think it's something that's quite unusual is a relationship like that between a politician and a public servant, where you've got you had sort of this mixture of these incredible long-term stability. I mean, Playford was the premier for 28 years.
Yeah.
And for almost that entire time, Ramsay was there as one of his top public servants. I think Ramsay started a year or so after Playford came into office. And so the two of them sort of were able to work together for nearly three decades on these projects, which allowed them to get so much done. I mean, certainly there are questions about the democratic principles of Thomas Playford. There was a fair bit of gerrymandering going on that allowed him to stay in office for
28 years.
For 28 years. Not super great for democracy, but, you know, it's an extraordinary sort of thing that – and I've seen a number of other examples of it in various other places where you have – a long-term relationship between a top public servant and a top politician who end up with so much support that they can basically do what they feel like they need to. And as long as their heart's in the right place, you can get a lot of pretty amazing stuff done.
Yeah. Incredible partnership.
Yeah. There you go. That's the story. That's
perfect.
The story, Cara.
Amazing.
There you go.
I love that. And, you know, we've had so much feedback so far on this series. We've got two episodes out now and the next two are coming out in the next 2 weeks. And so far, a lot of lovely feedback, ideas about where the series should go next, questions about how the series are made, and many people who have gotten into contact with us, much like Andrew, to say that they're actually related to the people who are featured in the series, which has been it's been remarkable to find out, because you just think of, we've just been thinking of these people as kind of these, you know, distant people from the past, but to be contacted by their actual family members has been so touching. We've had a couple of questions actually about whether the voices of the letter writers were right or whether they were recreations.
They are the real voices.
They are absolutely their voices.
that's absolutely, yeah. They're original. They were recorded in the ABC studios in 1959. The actual thing that we don't have is the handwritten letters.
Mm-hmm.
We only have the voices. So we don't actually have the paper copies of the letters. We only have the audio recordings of the letters. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's the real voices. But when I'm in the video version of this series, when I'm waving pieces of paper around trying to indicate that those are the letters, they're not. They're just pieces of paper.
Paper from the set.
Yeah, paper props. I think one of it might be a Media Watch script, like an old...
a confidential script.
Yeah, possibly.
We should say as well that, you know, obviously a lot of people listen to this show as a podcast, but it is, if you haven't checked out the show on YouTube and iView, it's definitely worthwhile because you get to see all this archive, beautiful archive footage and photos of the people that are speaking. And also Matt is in a very... souped up version of the basement, which is like incredible to see. The TV team have really outdone themselves.
Yes, they have. It was a lot of fun to make. It was hard to make, but it was a lot of fun, and it's worth seeing, not just hearing. But look, if you just want to listen, that's fine too.
That's fine. Please do both for our numbers.
Please, in fact, both.
For numbers' sake, thank you.
If you could just find as many platforms as you can and just engage with the content.
And
we
if
love
you
that.
Could just leave it playing all day and night, that would also be great.
Yeah,
for our
just hit repeat. That'd be great.
We've also had quite a few people asking what our predictions are for the future. And I guess, you know, hopefully we made it pretty clear with the series that predicting the future is futile and crazy, especially when things are so tumultuous and insane. But hopefully you'll be satisfied with episode 4 and where that lands, because there are a few predictions in that episode.
Yes. Every single time we did the Black Swans live show last year, every single time someone would ask me for a prediction about what do you think's going on? What do you think AI is going to be all about? And I'm like, did you
Were
not?
You listening?
Just listen to the hour-long rant that I just did about why predicting the future is so difficult and pointless. Anyway, Cara, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back on Thursday with our next episode of the Black Swan series, which is all about transportation. I'm very excited for you to hear it. I'll see you then.